If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,
you're sure
to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
Old Cape Cod, that old Cape Cod.
If you like the taste of a lobster stew, served by a window with an ocean view,
You're sure
to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
8 months after my trip to Wisconsin, I decided it's probably time to grow some balls. So, I put on my shiniest shirt and tightest pants, style my hair into antennae, and drive to the only street in America where on any given night you can see an obese man in drag riding a scooter the wrong way down a one-way street. Commercial Street in Provincetown. I don't know why I do this. Blame it on the memory of the way Alex touched me, how Unhairy looked at me in the eyes without crying. Blame it on the 6 amaretto sours and the shot of tequila. Blame it on the bossa fucking Nova. The last and only previous time I've ever been to P-Town, I went with Jennifer. We went on some lame whale watch, even though everything I wanted to see was on the shore. Most of the bars have terrifying themes. Drag shows, leather, bearded old men in diapers and dog collars. I end up in the alley, which, until I get to the front door, I assume got its name from its stunning location off the beaten path. No. The alley gets its name from the alley of dirty old men who line up from the main entrance to the dance floor, grabbing the crotch of every man who walks in the door. I am groped no less than 11 times before I reach the bar. It takes every iota of self-restraint I have not to run screaming back out, breaking through the chain of crotch grabbers like a kid in the world's most perverse game of Red Rover. I spend an hour by the bar as pretty people with brightly colored drinks swarm around me, exchanging phone numbers, flirtatious glances, and a variety of bodily fluids. I don't get any digits. Not even the finger. The alley fags don't even try grabbing my ass when I tango the fuck out the front door. Red Rover, Red Rover, send the closet case over.
Books in her hand and a shawl over her shoulders, and let her run. Run as fast as she can.
The first stranger I ever come out to is Walter. There's no crying, no long dramatic sighs. In fact, there isn't any talking at all. I don't even know what he looks like. Walter is P-Town Guy for You on America Online, or AOL for those of us who devote all of our non-outdoor time on it. He is the first person who IMs me when I check out the Cranberry Lake M4M chat room. He's nearly 5 years older than me. But he, of course, thinks I'm very mature for my age and thinks we should meet at his house. I have been taking liberal advantage of my employee discount at my new job, manager of Cranberry Liquors, a beer and wine store that a friend of my mother's has just bought. And 6 Mike's Hard Lemonades and 2 Harpoon IPAs tell me that driving over to a stranger's house at 2 in the morning is a perfectly reasonable idea if there's a possibility of sex. Especially given how hot he looks in the picture he sent me. His driveway sobers me. Still, I walk the gravelly little path to his house and knock on his front door. He answers in his robe.
Adam?
He asks, as if possibly he has invited several different people over to his house at 2:30 in the morning, and he's unclear as to which of these people I am. Hey.
Come on in!
From the outside, his house looks like every 2-story beachfront property Cranberry Lake has to offer. A house that says,
there might be a very lush,
modern space-age interior here, or I might be a split-level bungalow with minimal furniture and a hellacious spider problem. Either way, you can't afford me.
The inside says, "This guy is loaded and spares no expense." I'm loaded too, but in a different way. He passes me a Bass Ale to keep me properly blotto.
"My roommate's home, but he won't bother us too much."
He smiles.
"Do you meet many guys over AOL?
"You're the first," I say. He winks.
"I'm sure."
I blink.
"So..."
And he begins telling me the house's life story, how it used to belong to his aunt, and he visited when he was a kid, and he always loved it here, but spent the school years in Indiana, but when he graduated, he decided Cape Cod was the perfect place for him, so he moved to P-Town and got a job as a houseboy.
"You know, you can make a lot of money being a houseboy. What did you say you did for work again?"
"I'm living off an inheritance," I say. He ignores the obvious lie.
"Well,"
and he paints a beautiful abstract about the glamorous life, folding laundry and doing dishes, while rich men and their friends see to your every sexual need. I don't like the angle the painting is hanging at, the forced perspective, but I nod and, in all the right places, and soon his hands are in my hair and his tongue is in my mouth, and we are up the stairs to his room. The bedroom door closes. I see my boxers at the foot of his bed. He is a fist bigger than Alex. The door opens. There is someone else naked and, I can't do this, I say.
"I thought I told you this one was just for me," he says to the other naked man.
The other man is easily 50. Difficultly 50. Overly 50. I am wearing my boxers as a glove. I am unspiderwebbing them. A pocket hangs out of my jeans as I exit the room. "I'm sorry."
"Whatever," Walter says. "You're not even that cute."
Winding roads that seem to beckon you. Miles of green beneath the sky. Of blue church bells chiming on a Sunday morn remind you of the town where you were born. If you spend an evening, you want to stay watching the moonlight on Cape Cod Bay. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
It's not that I'm ugly. It's just that when I first started whoring over AOL, I didn't have any pictures of myself on my computer. I know what I look like. Most people on AOL just assume that if you don't have a picture on your computer, then you are some hideously deformed freak with a tuna casserole where your face should be. After a week of being mostly rejected due to my non-pick-having status, I break down and get some pictures scanned. Sure, some of the people who rejected me because I didn't have a pick end up rejecting me again anyways, but not all of them. Not being too much of a hypocrite, I often agree to meet people without pictures. Most of the guys are average to good-looking, granted, I have fairly low standards. The way I figure it, it's just as easy to lie about what you look like by sending a fake pic as it is to just not send one at all. Ryan is a 19-year-old closet case who doesn't want his picture floating around the internet, but he seems sweet and funny, so I decide to take a chance. I attend the usual routine, toss all the dirty laundry into the spare bedroom, change the sheets, make sure the condom drawer is filled, and make sure I've taken proper advantage of my employee discount at the liquor store. The doorbell rings at almost precisely midnight, 30 seconds before Cinderella's coach turns back into a pumpkin, and a minute before Peter comes to eat it. When you've agreed to meet someone for sex, someone you haven't seen before, you mentally come up with a variety of possible appearances for them. Ryan said he was 5'9", brown, almost black hair, swimmer's build. With a description like that, he could look like anyone. Well, anyone 5'9 with almost black hair. I try to picture how he carries himself. Perfect posture, mild slouch, hunchback. What does his ass look like? When the doorbell rings, I imagine his wide nose, piercing green eyes, and big, pouty lips. I am in no way prepared for who would be waiting on the other side of the door. Ryan? Ryan and I had known each other since he was 14 and I was 16. The fact that we had never had an inclination about each other is further proof that something in Cranberry Lake jams the fuck out of gaydar. We'd met at summer camp, and, as is common in Cranberry Lake and the rest of Cape Cod, we'd seen a hell of a lot of each other since. Various parties, at the beach, at random mutual friends' houses. In addition to managing a liquor store, I'd picked up a second job waiting tables at an Australian-themed chain restaurant called Kookaburra Canyon in order to pay rent and live my extravagant lifestyle of occasionally eating and going to school. When he showed up at the KC looking for a job, he was told that he was less than qualified and therefore not hired. So I hired him at the liquor store, allowing me to take more time off to wait tables and fuck strangers that I'd met over the internet. Hey, Ryan, I repeated. Fuck. Hey, Adam. I wasn't expecting someone who I've hired in my straight life to show up on my doorstep wanting me to stick my penis in them. I'm not disappointed, mind you. Ryan is fun to be around and easy on the eyes, but, well, this is very fucking awkward. Awkward? Yeah. But I'm willing to make the most of it. Even if we aren't going to get our fuck on, our IM conversation had hinted that he really needed someone gay to hear his shit. I am privately gay. I am his friend and boss. I am more than willing to hear him out and offer whatever advice I can. Yeah. Yeah, he repeats. Is he gonna come in or is he gonna run screaming back out into his car and drive off into the night? And if he does, am I going to need to hire a replacement at the liquor store? Well, I do my best frog bow, a la Lewis Carroll. Come on in. Ryan does the hawk circle around the den, picking up and then replacing the seashell ashtray and the Tom Robbins book I placed on the living room table to give me the proper pseudo-intellectual ambiance. So, this is Shea Stone. You've been here before, I say, haven't you? Not since you got back from college, no. I watch a single drop of sweat make its way down Ryan's forehead and down the bridge of his nose. I can barely restrain myself from walking over to the couch and licking it off. How did I never realize how beautiful his face is? Well, maybe I had. Maybe that's why I've hired him. Maybe my gaydar isn't as fucked as I think. Maybe I've just buried it into my subconscious. How had I not realized how badly I wanted him? Hard? Yes, I was. Hard lemonade? I should be going. No, please, make yourself at home. Move in. I know this isn't what I tap on a few of the piano keys. Either of us expected, but damn it, it's what I've wanted for years, whether I was aware of it or not. I flipped the cover over the keys. You said you needed someone to talk to. Yeah, but the idea was that it wasn't someone I know. And that we would... He picks up the ashtray again. I've never seen him nervous before. He's so cute when he doesn't know what to do with himself. But I mean, he puts the ashtray back down. That would be weird now, right? Wrong. It makes perfect sense. Our lives have been intertwined for 5 years. There is no logical reason for it. Small towns be damned. We are meant to be together forever and ever. And how many drinks have I had? Are you sure you don't want anything to drink? Jesus. I could really use something to drink, but if I have to drive home later... No, don't worry. You can sleep in my bed. The spare... I remembered the pile of dirty laundry and other assorted crap I'd thrown in the spare bedroom. Couch. The spare couch. My bed.
Okay.
He sits on the couch.
Do you have any Guinness?
I do. And after a few seconds of standing there looking at him, I realize that I should probably go into the kitchen and get some for him.
So,
Ryan picks up the ashtray again.
You're gay.
Yeah. I pull a Guinness out of the fridge for him and a hard cider, much better than hard lemonades, for me.
I had no idea.
Well, when I'm not in love or balls deep in a guy's ass, it's not an important part of my life.
Fuck.
I hand him a widget can of Guinness and a pint glass I'd liberated from Kookaburra Canyon. I don't do the whole, club scene or anything.
Have you, ever fooled around with anyone I know before? He asks.
That's classified. I haven't. Would you want me telling the next guy about you? He chugs the Guinness like it's a Coors Light.
Well, I mean, we're not going to.
We were going to. I could see it in his eyes and in the bulge in his khakis.
I mean, we can talk and everything.
More chugging.
But you probably don't want to.
I do.
That would be too
perfect. Another one?
I ask. Thanks.
I return to the kitchen. This time I bring the whole 4-pack out. It isn't too far a walk, but I have a feeling I won't want to leave the room again. It also doesn't take much of a psychic to realize that he is going to drink through his fair share of widget cans. He takes a second can, pops the top, and pours it into the pint glass.
You're not just trying to get me drunk to take advantage of me, are you?
Would you like me to seduce you? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I can't tell whether he gets the movie reference or if he thinks I'm just quoting a George Michael song. He takes another pull.
Man, I don't know if I'm up for this.
No worries. I sit down in one of the chairs facing the couch. You said you wanted to talk about things first anyway. He picks up the ashtray again.
So?
Talk.
If you spend an evening, you'll want to stay
on Cape Cod Bay,
watching the moonlight on Cape Cod Bay. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod. You're sure to fall in love. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
My father used to call the Catholics vampires because they were so fixated on drinking the blood of Christ. The only reason they chose wine to represent his blood was to give them an excuse to be alcoholics. The first time I went to Catholic Mass, I was 9, and spending a school vacation at Kevin Harris's parents' cabin in New Hampshire. I was so fascinated with the rituals that I followed him up to the altar and heard the priest say, "This is the body of Christ. It was broken for you. This is the blood of Christ. It was shed for you." Shed, not spilled idly, but shed. Something done with purpose, something even more powerful than reason. As an adult, I recognized the power of his blood being shed instead of spilled. As a child, I envisioned snakes. Despite my family's somewhat negative view of Catholicism, my parents were both raised Catholic and were practicing adults until the Catholic Adoption Service deemed them unfit to adopt, and for the record, as the child they did end up adopting and raising, they're saints compared to an overwhelming majority of Catholic parents I know. So despite this, I've never been one to generalize about people. If I'm going to dislike someone, it's going to be for their specific attitudes and actions, or their vocation. I refuse to generalize about Catholics, but I will say that in my experience, Catholic priests are snakes. I remember hearing about priest abuse back when I was a preteen in Cranberry Lake. My neighbor across the street was raped by a priest in the 70s. She was raising her children Congregationalist. By the time we moved out of Cranberry Lake, she had converted my mother. While I've never had strong opinions on the religion front, it was nice to see my mother find something she believed in. I found my faith in the body of a man. Never felt the need to kneel for any of them, but I've prayed to eyes and made sacrifice for holy voices that offer me love or forgiveness. Ryan's eyes are salvation. And while we might be several beers too drunk to drive, our conversation is exceptionally sober. "When did you realize you were gay?" he asks. I tell him a condensed version of the truth. I've always known. I don't ask him how long he's known he was gay. The subject shimmies into something abstract and unimportant like what we look for in guys when I notice Ryan has fallen asleep. On my floor. Like a teenage girl at a slumber party. There's something perfect about the physical appearance of a sleeping man. Still, all I want to do is interrupt his sleep. Kiss on the cheek, pulling him up by the arm and leading him up to my bed. I'm not considering fucking him. I want to rest my head on his stomach and listen to the tide of his breath. "Ryan," I whisper as I brush his hair back. "Ryan." "Huh? It's me. Adam."
"Oh. Adam. Is it time to go to work?"
Comprehension pries his eyelids apart.
"What?"
"I thought you might want to go upstairs and sleep in a bed."
"With you?"
"I was hoping." His eyes swivel away from mine. But there's the pull-out couch if you prefer."
"I'm sorry. It's..."
His eyes pendulum back to me. He leans in for a kiss. His tongue tastes like barley. His 3 a.m. stubble scratches my own. "It's okay." I bend towards him for another kiss when he shoots up and runs into the bathroom. Another sacrifice to the porcelain, oh God, of future hangovers. "Are you okay?" I ask when he comes back out. I know I'm not the world's best kisser, but
no, no. "It's not that. It's..."
"I know, I was kidding. We both drank quite a bit tonight."
"It's not that either. The last time I kissed a guy..."
I can tell this is a pause I shouldn't fill.
"I was raped. My..."
He turns and speaks to the TV, as though it were displaying the real truth behind human emotion rather than reflecting the streetlight as filtered through Venetian blinds.
"I don't want to talk about it."
"Okay.
Now, I can't kiss a guy. Can't even pass a fucking church. Fuck! Fuck him!"
I was 9 years old, and standing behind Kevin Harris, waiting to take communion for a religion I knew nothing about. Everyone else in the church was standing up and walking towards the altar. I heard the priest say, "This is the body of Christ. It was broken for you. This is the blood of Christ. It was shed for you." Ryan is shaking in my arms, baptizing me with his tears shed for his lost faith. It occurs to me, shed is more than a verb meaning to pour forth. It is also a noun, a place to store things when you don't need them, but know that someday soon you will. A rake, a bicycle, a secret, your faith. Thank you.
today's podcast, The Unsafe Mode Journal, Slow Flashes, Part 10, Getting Religion, was brought to you by Sand Dunes, Salty Air, Quaint Little Villages Here and There, My Computer Crashing, Causing This to Be Several Days Late, The Ambient Bird Noise of Davis Square, Where I Recorded This, and other things that I'm probably going to want to forget about later. Today's intro and most of the incidental music was Old Cape Cod by Patty Page. The outro music is also Old Cape Cod, but by John Davis, no relation to Davis Square or Camp Davis. The incidental music was Red Rover by Rosie Thomas. For more information on the In Safe Mode podcast, you can go to www.crookedtreehouse.com or you can email me, I guess, at insafemode@gmail.com. Please, please, I enjoy the size of my penis, but I do appreciate your continued offers to help me expand my horizons?